Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Program, where we reignite your passion, your purpose, and your play. Find us at www.hotpinkyou.com. Take it away, ladies.
Hello, thank you, and welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Life Classes. This is the last of the year class, and I am so thrilled that you are here with me to spend around 30 to 40 minutes of your day in reflection so that you can live the best life possible. Welcome, I'm Christy Bemis. I'm author, speaker, psychotherapist, and I like to call myself an Ignite Your Life coach when I work with women or even with couples. I enjoy having them live their best life, get rid of the barriers and the things that are standing in their way to reignite their passions, purpose, and play. And this year, I'm launching into my living authentic as fuck life. And so I hope you will join me as I start doing YouTube channel shows and have guest speakers here on Blog Talk Radio programs and all kinds of new topics to ignite your life. So today I am inviting you into my top 10 lessons of the past year. I hope that there is something brilliantly here for you. I have whittled it down to my top 10, although life gives us lots of lessons. And so I hope you grab a pen and a journal today, and let's dive in to the top 10 life lessons of this past year. I'll go through each one of them, share a few stories, and I will give you a little prompt or journal prompt in order to reflect on your own thoughts around that particular life lesson and where it sits and lands with you. So sit back, grab a journal, grab a pen. I have my cup of coffee, and let's dive in deep. I'm so glad you're here with me today. So number one lesson, I am also working this into a blog. So if you go to my website at www.hotpinkyou.com, this is also a blog where you can get all of these lessons. So if you want to just sit back and listen in deep, each of these will be written out there and also a link to this podcast. So lesson number one is, what if it all works out? And I love this lesson because a lot of times we live in our worries and our fears around life and situations, and it keeps us tied to maybe a toxic situation. It keeps us tied to living life a little less authentically or really less authentically than what we deserve and desire to live. And so this life lesson, what if it all works out, is super valuable to me. So as I sat back and I looked January through December and all of the entangled events that evolved in my life, from my divorce to my brother's giving me a phone call and giving me the worst news that you want to hear as a sibling, that your sibling has cancer, to joyous things as well, you know, really enjoying my home, refinancing my home, enjoying a lot of boating on the water, enjoying trips to Maui and working in LA multiple times this last year and working all over the country, really, at different times in as safe a way possible with what's happening in our world today. And so lots of situations happen, but in 2021, the biggest one was launching into the year with two big events that happened. One is the finalization of a divorce that was started the prior year. And all of my fears, you know, like all of the things that I feared about most, things like dismantling my family, the impact on my kids, my relationship with my stepchildren, all of those things, some of those fears, many of them came true. You know, you can't carry with you the dreams and desires of your past life. You have to create new ones. And here I had been kind of bundling up my past life going, well, maybe we can just get this divorce and then we can still move on and live our life, you know, somewhat together. And really, I think what happened was everything needs to get dismantled in order for any kind of new growth to occur. It's almost like the forest being burned down and then the new growth happening. Well, 2021 was definitely, for me and for many of the women that I worked with over the year, a year of kind of burning the old down. And a lot of my fears came true. But here's the thing. Out of those fears coming true and what felt like burning down of the old, there is new growth occurring. And there is a happiness that invades my entire life, that runs through all of my life, and I feel stronger as a woman, and I feel more adventurous, and I definitely feel more authentic, which is a really big theme I'm going to be cultivating with you all this year, of how can you live authentically, even if it means doing the hard things, even if it means burning the old down and moving into the new. And so life lesson number one, what if it does all work out? Might not be the vision you thought it was going to be, but it is a vision of what's to come. The other big event that occurred in the beginning of 2021 is my 18-year-old daughter moved out, and so I'm an empty nester, which has been really incredible. Like, if you are all sitting there with teenagers on the verge of moving out, and you want to know, is it as bad as what it looks like? Yes, it's like... It's grief, it's sadness, it's hard. It is so hard watching your kids leave and then the silence. So here is what I hope for you. Create a life you really love, and especially if you're in partnership, look across the table at your partner. Is this the person you want to be with? Is this the relationship you want to have with this person once your little people leave? Huge, huge question to ask you. Number two, life lessons from this year, from me to you, is go where the love is. I spent a lot of time in the beginning of 2021 with what felt like really chase energy, whether it was extended family or trying to get, you know, our family together, things like that. And really what I found is that it was push energy. It was not attraction energy. And it was unidirectional, meaning it was all coming in and being initiated from me. Even some of my friendships, a lot of them like being initiated from me. And what I really sought out was bi-directional. What I really desire in the relationship is people who also choose me, who love me. In what ways do you leave your welcome mat out to relationships and friendships longer than what that person deserves or what is needed? And when does your welcome mat become a doormat? And so this life lesson, go where the love is. Love should not be so much push energy. Go where the people are that have open doors, open arms, invitations, and bi-directional communication with you. That's attraction energy. You're attracting in what you desire, and they are giving you that attraction energy. So, lesson number two, go where the love is. There needs to be some easefulness to true, authentic partnerships and love. Number three is being my own best advocate. How are you being your own best advocate? For what I want, what I desire, if you aren't your own best advocate for how you want to spend your time, money, and energy, nobody else will be. And even if there are obstacles in your way, what do advocates do? They push through them. They find a way around them. They find a solution. And that's how you can be your own best advocate. You know the life that you envision for yourself. Now it takes advocacy to truly push through barriers and situations that are less than what you desire. And so being your own best advocate is
so important. And that was a super valuable life lesson that it was hard, but advocating for what I knew life could and should be and feel like was super important in this past year. Number four, this is a really timely one. I don't know if people are noticing a big movement in the alcohol wine industry around mocktails, bars opening up that are serving just non-alcoholic drinks, and just this big movement, even like especially with younger people in the beverage industry, of developing beverages and brands that are encouraging non-alcoholic consumption. And I think a lot of it is due to growing up in alcoholic homes or with alcohol messages and really questioning their alcohol consumption. So for me, that was a question I had in 2021 is, why do I drink when I drink? And really being intentional with my connection with substance and finding my feelings, what my triggers were, what my cravings were, instead of just autopiloting and habitual, like, well, there's a football game on, so of course you grab a beer, right? Or habitual, dinner is served, glass of wine, right? And so instead, I became very intentional and really started developing mocktails and shrubs that are vinegar kind of based and give you that bite in a mixed drink, and really questioning, like, why do I drink when I drink? And noticing my triggers of boredom and, like, loneliness. Having social and fun without the alcohol or the heavy consumption of it. I really started noticing when I went to an event, like a pool party this summer, and I watched just the habitual one after another from some of the people that were there. No judgment. I'm not making judgment of other people's choices, right? But why do I drink what I drink? And watching, you know, what was once myself of just autopilot of, I'm at a social event, so of course, yes, yes, another one, versus, you know, incorporating water, incorporating other fun drinks and mocktails. Just not numbing myself, but really starting to take a look at it. And I'm noticing more and more women in my life doing, like, dry Januaries or dry July is, like, another one. And when you grow up in the Midwest, our culture is really around all events, drinking is normal. I was even at a funeral the other day, and, like, it's in the middle of the day, and we're, you know, everybody's getting, like, a old-fashioned, you know, because that's just what we do here in the Midwest, right? So number four was really reevaluating my relationship, and I've made a lot of, like, changes in that relationship with substance, with alcohol. And so I encourage you to do the same. Like, what substances or what habitual things are you incorporating in your life that maybe need reevaluating? Instead of being on autopilot around things, noticing what your emotional triggers for those things are, so that you can live with greater intention. And when we live with greater intention and we break habits, we are creating new growth, and we are creating dreams and desires to actually have fertile ground to grow from. And so that's what I encourage for you in the next year. Number five, I love this one. I love this one because this has been kind of a couple years in coming. Safety resides in me. Not something external, not external circumstances, not external events, not external people even. But safety, no matter what's happening around me, resides in me. And I've been on this probably 3 or 4 year navigation of how my nervous system works. When does it become dysregulated? When don't I feel safe? When does fight, flight, or freeze occur? And in what relationships do I feel safe? And in what relationships don't I feel safe? And why, like, what's coming out for me in them? And I had a situation where I was in a meeting and all the people around me were, I could see their nervous systems were dysregulated. My nervous system was dysregulated because it was a really intense meeting. But the man next to me was totally regulated, totally calm. He had this like slight smile on his face even and just nodding his head. Well, the rest of us are falling apart around him. And afterwards, I just asked, what was going through your head? And he just was very quiet and said, I feel safe in my body. I felt safe in my body. And it was so interesting because what was happening externally wasn't impacting him because of the internal environment he created. So this summer, I took myself on a camping trip because I really wanted to find source of my own safety. And at night, laying in my little two-person tent and everything all set up and, you know, laying there by myself at night and listening to off in the distance, you know, coyotes, and off in the distance, an owl that kept coming closer and closer and closer until the owl was almost above my tent. You could hear it was just coming closer. And there were really no campers around me. There were not a lot of people camping. And so I was off in this little, section of the campground that not anybody else was there. I was alone in the forest with myself and my body. And I worked with my nervous system that I was safe. I was safe here in this moment in time. I was safe in my body. And that I could create that for myself, regardless of the stories and slasher movies I had grown up with and, all of the unsafety in the stories that we tell ourselves or that we've experienced as women being alone and that we're not safe if we're alone. And I found safety in that moment. And so I encourage you to find moments of time where you can find safety in your own body as well. Because no matter what the external set of circumstances might suggest around me, core. And we can hold and maintain that safety regardless of what other people's choices are outside of us. Number six, vulnerability wins. It's so hard to be vulnerable, right? It just really sets us up for maybe pain, rejection. But the more vulnerable I can become, the more vulnerability I get back, which leads to greater authenticity, more realness in my life. In the times in my past when I've held back, armored up, reserved my true feelings, held back because I didn't have some guarantee or sure thing from the other person that I wouldn't get hurt, I really lose big in love, and I really don't ever have or attain real love. And so despite the fears or what societal beliefs are, there were weeds that needed pulling in my life. And just when I think I can't go any deeper because this is so scary, and I do, there's something beautiful on the other side of it. So in what ways can you lead in your life with greater vulnerability? All right, leading us into lesson number seven. How can we create boundaries in our life with connection? So this last year was an incredible year of lots of new learning for me. And I studied with Somatica out in California with Celeste and Daniel. And one of the biggest things was boundaries with connections, which had never really occurred to me. I can keep a boundary and keep connection with somebody. What does that look like? A lot of times when I started finding my own voice, instead of being a doormat, the volume was turned up too high, and I'd be no, I don't want that. And in working through with the various partners that I've worked through in the Somatica training, where we have actual real-time exploration with another person in the class, I discovered that a lot of times I do a really good job at setting boundaries, but it's kind of a hard line. There's not a lot of flexibility and rigidity in it. And it doesn't take into account the other person and their needs or feelings or wants. And so when I started taking in the other person's feelings as being just as important, they might be different than mine, but they're valuable and important. And when I can acknowledge those differing needs and maybe even acknowledge I can't meet them, but moving away from like the use of ultimatums or lines in the sand based on fears that are either real or imagined and are often done maybe to get the person to do something. So they're kind of manipulating them to do something that we want or need. I learned that when I can make a request of somebody from a place of love and compassion and also of curiosity and desire to learn how that request or boundary lands for them and what are their needs in that boundary so that their needs can still get met. So I'll give you an example around, you know, asking for a boundary in a relationship. I'm not a big, like, talker on the phone or like use of text messaging. In fact, a lot of the complaints over the past couple of years of closest friends are, you know, I text you and I don't hear from you for a couple of days, you know, and for me, it's like, I do a lot of disconnect. I do a lot of like in my own place, which will lead us to the next life lesson. Trust me, I'm doing a lot of work on self this year. I hope you all are too. And what I really was learning was that, you know, there it was maybe taking into consideration my needs of like, I need quiet time, I need privacy, I need disconnect sometimes, and I don't like to always be connected. What I was really learning is how hurtful that was over to the other person. So it might be my boundary, but it wasn't taking into consideration their need. And so by amping up my response time and by being more respectful towards another person's needs, like maybe I don't want to be hanging on the phone for 30 minutes, but it's required in this connection and in this relationship, how can I negotiate? How can my boundaries be there and available to me, but with greater flexibility and an encouragement of hearing the other person and what they need? And so that's been really great in growing and deepening some of these connections and relationships that I've really maintained over this last year. I have some amazing, amazing people in my life. So if you are one of them and you're listening, you know who you are. And I just deeply, deeply love and value your friendship and relationship in my life. Which leads me to number 8. Attachment work is the bomb. If you are not doing attachment work in your life right now, I really, really, really encourage you to seek out some resources and some coaching and some connection around attachment work. It is like mind blowing to me in terms of like relationships and things that I thought I knew. Like I thought I knew what attachment style was, but man, the deeper I dive into like some of the stuff, it is super incredible. My personal style is avoidant. And at age 51, I'm just beginning to recognize like how important it is that I show up in the world and more specifically, what or who I'm attracting in by my attachment style and what that means to relationship. It also leads me to the work I must do if I want to feel the feelings I desire and have the experiences in all relationships that I desire to have, you know, love and deepness and intimacy and connection. And so I have just done a ton of work, and I promise you, if you do the work around attachment and recognizing your style or your combination of style, you know, Stan Chotkin's work in Wire for Love, Harville Hendrick, Helen LaKelly Hunt's work in Getting the Love You Want, and even the amazing PolySecure book, which, you know, whether you're poly or monogamous or not, is just the work that she has done, the author has done around attachment is incredible to read in that book. which was a required reading that we had for Somatica. So attachment work is the bomb. If you want to learn a little bit more about why you do what you do, and even, you know, invite your partner in. Not that I want you to go out there and fix your partner. They're not a project. They're a partner. You often hear me say that, but that you invite them into this deeper learning with you around attachment so that they can uncover and discover their own attachment style. And I give you this caution caveat because a lot of women will be like, oh, great, I have a new tool. I can go fix my partner. And I'm saying to you, no, that's not why I'm giving you the tool. I'm giving you the tool so that you can fix yourself and invite your partner to take a look at reflecting on themselves. Not to go out and say, I've read this chapter in this book, and so now I know that you're anxious attachment style, and here's what you need to do. We do that as women, right? All the time, because we think if our partner makes these X, Y, and Z changes, our life will be better. And what I'm saying to you is the work begins inside. The work begins with you, and we stay other-focused because it's so much harder to look at ourselves versus to look at other people. So that's just a little side note on looking at your attachment style. Oh, number 9, financial sovereignty is kick ass, ladies. I'm just telling you, if you are out there underemployed or unemployed or dependent in your relationship with your partner for all of the income coming in, if you are scared to make a decision to leave, to go, because you don't know if you can make it on your own, I'm telling you, this has been the first time in my entire adult life that it's just me. Even in my 20s, when I was single, I still relied or thought of, I always got my parents just in case, right? And now as a single woman in my 50s, I am completely 100% responsible for me, and it is amazing. It feels good. I make choices based on what I want versus this neediness. And so financial sovereignty, if you can learn how to manage your money, budget your money, invest your money, hire good people. I hired a CPA firm this year to really get my ducks in a row with both of my businesses, so that I feel greater adulting and responsibility. It just feels so good. This past year, I, you know, made it through my divorce. I paid for my own health care. I'm paying for, you know, my own daughter's like dental needs and health care needs. I got my dog's teeth fixed, which is not cheap, people. It's not a cheap endeavor. My debt's under control. I have savings in retirement and luxuries. I traveled. It's not scary anymore. It feels super empowering. When my sump pump went out, I was just like, okay, get a plumber. You know, this is going to be a couple hundred dollars, but I have it. Like, I know where my money is. It just feels so responsible, and I feel like I'm in greater financial stewardship to do the work that I want to do. It also gives me greater voice and choice, and so financial sovereignty kicks ass. Lesson number 9. And I'm going to actually give you a bonus one. So number 10 is something I've been working on since around February, March, where I was really recognizing one of the greatest angst in my relationship was disappointing people, whether it was disappointing my partner or disappointing my kids or disappointing, you know, my family or, you know, anybody really. And I started recognizing this around February. I got a deeper and deeper understanding through it, through my training with Somatica, the disappointing like module of how we can handle disappointment in ourselves and in others came at like the most proper time around March and April. And really what I learned is to sit with disappointment, that sometimes I'm going to disappoint. In the past, disappointing somebody disconnected me from them. I would be like, oh, okay, you're seeing the flaws in me. You see the less than perfect in me. Okay, I'm going to go over here and play with my marbles. Come back when you can see me perfectly again, right? Get over your disappointment. And what I recognize is disappointment can lead to deeper and deeper connection. We can disappoint people and still sit with them in their disappointment and hold space for that, but still hold our own ground in what we need and want. And that's been super incredible as a life lesson. I encourage you to work with disappointment. When I work in my coaching or my psychotherapy practice with people, we actually do experiential exercises of, I'm going to disappoint you. Like, I'm going to say something right now that's going to disappoint you, and I want that to sit in your body. And then vice versa, they practice with me saying something that's going to disappoint me and how that feels in their body, which is the harder thing, honestly, that I watch my clients go through. It's excruciating watching them say something to me and then me have the reaction and watching them like squirm in their body of, oh my gosh, can I just take it back? And it's like, no, you can't take it back, but sit with it, because in loving relationships, we will disappoint people. And that's okay. We can still love them. They can still love us. We can still move on from there. I'm going to end with a bonus one, growth mindset. As a 50-some-year-old woman, I thought I knew a lot of things. And I do. I know a lot of things. But in signing up and taking the coursework in Somatica, it blew my mind of the actuality of what I did not know. And we don't know what we don't know until we like branch out. So it really opened my mind, my eyes, my heart, my body to new learning. And that I thought that there was nothing new that I really much needed to learn. I had learned the cognitive behavioral stuff. I, you know, had learned all this other, stuff in psychology. I've been doing psychotherapy for almost 20 years. Like, what more is there to know, right? And it just is blowing my mind. And then all of the new things coming out in neuroscience, and it just blows my mind that there's just so much. And having a growth mindset really supports living more authentically. So I hope these life lessons that I've learned over this past year are valuable and helpful to you. I hope that there's some takeaway as you wrote that life lesson. How does it pertain to you? What does it mean to your life? What are your lessons that are different? I would love to hear from you. Email me at hotpinku@gmail.com. I would love to hear. I took this from you know, your podcast today, and here's a life lesson of mine that I want to give you. Give me a gift as we move into this next year of, what were your top lessons? Are they the same as mine? Are they different? Where did yours come from? What are the stories behind the life lessons? I love when women send me their stories. And as I work on writing even another book this next year, maybe some of your stories will get woven into the fabric of that book with your permission. So reach out and let me know. Thanks for joining me today. It's been another great 30-plus minutes of inspiration and hopefully new knowledge for you. You can find me at www.hotpinku.com. Join my email list. I'm starting a new list. That's going to be super exciting. It's like a mini magazine to ignite your life. And I mail it out about once a week, not much more than that. And so I don't want to clutter up your inbox with junk. I want you to have things that will help you reignite your pleasure, your passion, your purpose, and even some of your play. So join me as we dive into the next year. I hope that you found great depth and passion and purpose in this episode of my top 10 lessons from this past year. Have a great new year, and I'll see you on the other side.